The following is a recording of a live questions and answers session that took place on Friday, October 26th, 2012.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to eBible Fellowship's questions and answers time for a Friday evening. These broadcasts are live every Friday at about 9:30 p.m. Eastern, and this program is designed to interact with you with your questions and comments related to the Bible, and we'll try to respond as well as possible by going to the Bible. And so, with our Bibles at the ready, it's now time to turn things over to our speaker for this Friday evening questions and answers time and say hello to Chris McCann. Good evening, Chris.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to eBible Fellowship's question and answer time. We're just going to open up the room at this time for the next half hour. If you have a question, please contact us in one of the ways that was mentioned, and I'll try to respond by turning to the Bible. Now let's go to the first person on the phones. Welcome to our question and answer.
Yes, Brother McCann, you're coming in loud and clear. Your study has become very intriguing, interesting, and continues to get heavier into the truth of God. My question is, when the men of Beth Shemesh opened or lifted the mercy seat off of the ark, is that a picture of the churches bringing their false gospel, removing the truth of salvation from the churches, etc.? Is that what you're...
Well, what we have to take into account the time that this is taking place at the end of the 7 months and the total number of those that died, also about 84,000 when we take into account the initial battles. Well, both of those things, they identify what is happening with the end of the Great Tribulation, May 21, which was the 8400th day of the exact 23 years. And that day, while it ended the Great Tribulation, it also transitioned into the Day of Judgment. So due to those two things, that about 84,000 dying and the end of the seven-month period, the ark was in the land of the Philistines, and actually a third thing in verse 20 where the statement is made, who is able to stand before this holy Jehovah God? That identifies with Judgment Day itself in Revelation chapter 6. It's almost a word-for-word statement. And so all three of these things are the Lord putting his finger on May 21, the beginning of Judgment Day. And so when the men of Beth Shemesh lifted up the mercy seat in order to look into the ark and see its contents, the two tables of stone, this, even though it was their action, their sinful action in removing the mercy seat, and thus it does typify the removal of Christ, because the mercy seat is completely identified with him, it indicates no more salvation. And mankind does bring the judgment of God upon themselves. And it's mankind that has consistently rebelled throughout the generations that has led us to this point of entering into the Day of Judgment.
Well, then the men of Beth Shemesh represent mankind then.
Well, it's the ark was returned to Israel, but again, it's the end of the Great Tribulation, and we have to ask the question, does the church continue under judgment at the end of the Great Tribulation? And the answer is yes, because they're a part of the world. So judgment began at the house of God for the 23 full years, but and judgment in that sense ended on the churches, but it continues on them. And that's one of the reasons why they experience more stripes, that the wrath of God continues on them, because they're a part of the world, part of Satan's kingdom, like all the unsaved.
Yes, very clear. Thank you, brother.
Well, thank you for those questions and comments. And let's go to the next person. Welcome to Friday Night Question and Answer.
Hi, Chris.
Hello. Good evening.
Good evening. Psalm 76, verse 7, 8, and 9. Isn't this talking about what you just said in Revelation and Romans being abide to sin?
Psalm 76.
Verse 7, 8, and 9.
And 7 through 9. Thou, even thou, art to be feared, and who may stand in thy sight when once thou art angry? Thou didst cause judgment to be heard from heaven. The earth feared and was still when God arose to judgment to save all the meek of the earth. Selah. Yes, this is, it appears to be speaking of judgment day and that language. Who may stand in thy sight when once thou art angry? You know, there's also a psalm. In Psalm 130, it says in verse 3, if thou, Jehovah, shouldest mark iniquities, O Lord, who shall stand? And the answer is no one will stand if God chooses to mark iniquities. And in the day of judgment, that's exactly what he's doing. He's coming and he's now holding mankind responsible. Each one is accountable to the Lord for the things they've done in their life, in their body. And it's only by the mercy and grace of God that the child of God escapes this judgment, because Jesus is the one who took upon him our transgressions and paid the penalty. And so we're free. We're delivered from the judgment. But if a person doesn't have Christ as Savior, well, then the Lord is marking their iniquities, and they are responsible, and God is pouring out his wrath upon them, and none will stand. So that's why this question is put the way it is.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Well, thank you for those verses, and let's go to the next person on the phone. Welcome to our Friday Night Question and Answer.
Mr. McCann, how you doing?
Very well, thank you.
Just had a question about, in your First Samuel series, part 84, you had mentioned about in Judges 17 through 21 that the timeline of that was during the reign of when Eli was a judge, and there was just... Some of the old commentators have you know, made the point that these chapters occur earlier than that. I just wanted to show you one verse that they point to.
Okay.
In Judges chapter 20, verses 27 and 28.
Judges 20, and I'll start reading in verse 26. Then all the children of Israel and all the people went up and came unto the house of God and wept and sat there before Jehovah and fasted that day until even and offered burnt offerings and peace offerings before Jehovah. And the children of Israel inquired of Jehovah, for the ark of the covenant of God was there in those days. And Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, the son of Aaron, stood before it in those days, saying, shall I yet again go out to battle against the children of Benjamin, my brother, or shall I cease? And that Jehovah said, go up, for tomorrow I will deliver them into thine hand.
And the point, the one question, thing in question there was in verse 28 when it says that Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, the son of Aaron, stood before it in those days. If that were to hold, then this would have to be much before when Eli was a judge. Do you think that's accurate?
Well, I think that it could be that this is a different Phinehas. I haven't checked this out with that in mind, but if you look at the line of Aaron, yes, his sons were Eleazar and then Phinehas, but also so were later generations given the same name. That's one possibility. Someone could be said to be a son of Eleazar and Aaron, and it could be a much later descendant just with a similar name. But thank you for bringing this up. I'll take a look at it and try to see if there's any indication here, if this is actually that individual or maybe the wording. I'll just take a closer look, but thank you.
Okay, thanks.
All right. All right. Does anyone else have a question or a comment that you'd like to make? Please, you're welcome. Feel free to raise your hand and to contact us if you do have something on your mind. Okay, we have someone on the phone. Welcome to our Friday night question and answer time.
Echo 2011 asks, in Matthew 4, verse 11, what exactly did the angels do to minister unto the Lord? Is it the same as when Peter's mother-in-law was sick in Matthew 8, verse 15, and the Lord healed her and she ministered unto the people?
Well, let me look at that verse in Matthew 8, 15. In verse 14, and when Jesus was come into Peter's house, he saw his wife's mother laid and sick of a fever. And he touched her hand, and the fever left her, and she arose and ministered unto them. Now, in this account, it's a historical account, and it's, I suppose we would say, a very minor miracle of Christ when placed in contrast to raising the dead and giving sight to the blind and so on. But it's teaching actually the same thing. His wife's mother was sick of a fever, and when you have a fever, you're burning. And so that fever was spiritually pointing to the fact that she was under the wrath of God because of her sin. And when Christ touched her, as it says in other places, one woman touched Jesus and virtue went out of him and healed her. Here, Jesus touched her hand and the fever left her. And that's a picture of the fiery wrath of God leaving her. In other words, as though she became saved. And what happens after we become saved? Well, she arose and ministered unto them. When Christ saves someone, as Jesus said to Nathanael, that you will see the angels of God ascending and descending upon the Son of Man. And that is when someone becomes saved, they, in a figure, in a spiritual sense, are transported into heavenly places to be seated at the right hand of God in the person of Christ. And then during normal times, until the end of the latter rain, and until we entered this day of judgment, they were dispatched once again. They descended as messengers to the earth to carry the gospel message. And so Peter's mother-in-law is picturing that. She is a picture of someone becomes saved and immediately is given the task of ministering to others, just like all of us were. Now, that's different from Matthew 4. Now, Christ is being tempted of the devil for 40 days and 40 nights, and this is a situation that's very different than the typical ministry of God's people to sinners. I'm not sure exactly of the spiritual meaning of this, where it says, then the devil leaveth him, and behold, angels came and ministered unto him. Yeah, I thank you for the question, but I really don't know what the spiritual meaning is. But thank you once again. And is there any other questions from Pal Talk?
Yes. Josiah asks, could May 21, which is the day of judgment, also signify that the atonement has been completed, according to what we read in Daniel chapter 9, verses 24 through 27?
Daniel 9. That's a lot of information there. I think you would have to be more specific. This is laying out just God's much of God's overall salvation plan. 70 weeks or 70 sevens are determined upon thy people and upon thy holy city to finish the transgression and to make an end of sins and to make reconciliation for iniquity and to bring in everlasting righteousness and to seal up the vision and prophecy and to anoint the most holy. Know therefore and understand that from the going forth of the commandment to restore and to build Jerusalem unto the Messiah the Prince shall be 7 weeks and 62 weeks. The street shall be built again and the wall even in troublous times. Now, I've gone over this and I've read Mr. Camping's booklet, The 70 Weeks of Daniel 9, and as I'm sure many of you have, and I can't find anything to change than what Mr. Camping has said, or I know that he wrote this a long time ago, and I know there's some elements here that are interesting, but when we look at the breakdown of the weeks, it fits the scenario that Mr. Camping laid out in that booklet very well, and I don't see how it fits any other scenario. But you know, I continue to read it and pray about it. But I don't see how it relates to May 21 or these days after the tribulation. But thank you. And is there anything further from Pal Talk?
Josiah mentioned that the end of the 70 weeks part is his most curious question. It's the part that he's most curious about.
Mm-hmm. Verse 27, and he shall confirm the covenant with many for 1 week, and in the midst of the week he shall cause the sacrifice and the oblation to cease. Now, that would, if it was all laid out, beginning of the 70th week would occur in 29 AD and at the point of Jesus's the beginning point of Christ's ministry and at the end of his 3.5 years, the midst of the week, Christ did cause sacrifice and oblation to cease because he offered up himself, and that was the end of sacrifice. So that would be the middle of the 70th week and that at the cross. And then it goes on to say, and for the overspreading of abominations, he shall make it desolate even until the consummation. So the implication is from there, from the cross, will be the last half of the 70th week. And when we search the Bible, we find language of the woman fleeing into the wilderness for 1260 days. Which is a 3.5 year period, and that covers the whole New Testament age, and that would be the completion of the 70th week. Now, it could be there's something further here, but I don't see it right now. But thank you once again. And is there anything else, any other questions that anyone may have, or anything more from Pal Talk?
Let's see, one asks, Hosea chapter 13 looks like it talks about judgment on the church. Is verse 11 of that chapter speaking about Satan taking his seat in the church on May 21, 1988, and his removal on May 21, 2011?
Well, let's read Hosea 13, and let's see if we can see the context. Verse 9, O Israel, thou hast destroyed thyself, but in me is thine help. I will be thy king. Where is any other that I may save thee in all thy cities, and thy judges of whom thou sayest, give me a king and princes? I gave thee a king in mine anger, and took him away in my wrath. The iniquity of Ephraim is bound up, his sin is hid. Well, now, historically, we can understand this. When God gave Israel their request, they besought Samuel to go to the Lord and ask for a king, and God was displeased they did this, but yet he did give them a king. And finally, hundreds of years later, he took away the king in his wrath, both upon Israel in the north when he raised up the Assyrians, and Judah in the south when the Lord raised up the Babylonians. After that, never again was there a king of Israel, except when the Lord Jesus, the King of Kings, appeared. And so historically, we can understand this statement. Now, you're raising an interesting idea that God is likening the king here to Satan. And now we know this about Satan, that God loosed him and did give him authority to rule. And that is like a king, but I'm not sure that God calls him a king anywhere else. And that would seem to be important. And God loosed him, set him up as the man of sin, who took his seat in the temple, and to sit is to rule. And then God did take him away in his wrath on Judgment Day, May 21. So it's a very interesting idea, and it's definitely something that would be good for us to check into further. Thank you for bringing up this verse. Let me just remind everyone, this Sunday, Lord willing, we will be holding a time of fellowship, but it will be in person at the Delco Union Hall in Linwood, PA, and we hope to broadcast it live over the internet, as we've been doing, and so you're welcome to come and visit in person, or to listen if you've been listening. And we'll also have the question and answer there at the fellowship hall. But again, we hope to be able to take questions through the internet. Okay, well, we do have someone else on the phone, so let's go to the next person. Welcome to our Friday night question and answer.
Good evening, Chris. James chapter 2, please.
James 2. What verse?
26.
For as the body without the spirit is dead, so faith without works is dead also.
I was looking at this this word works, and it's curious how the word works in many places is a trap, you know, because we can't do any works. And when you look at the work that Christ did, the greatest work Christ did was salvation. So, and at the heart of what he did, laying his life down, is the verse that says, no greater love hath a man than that he laid down his life. So what I was really looking at is that the work that Christ did, the underlying, the bottom line, if you will, of everything that he did on the cross is because of agape love. And that ties really to the marriage relationship, in the sense that you know, the marriage of the bride to the husband, the love in between the bride and the husband. And there's there's another verse that talks about how love cannot be it never dies, okay, or it can't be taken away. I forget the verse. So my point in this is, when we look at this word works, I know that according to the direct hermeneutic, we can't make a direct substitution. But when you look at the work that Christ did, can we look at this and say that faith without agape love is dead? Can you see that? So that it was the faith that it's almost like there's a hierarchy here. Faith, we always understand faith is at the top of the list, but actually it's love. That without love, the faith is.
You don't have to go here for that idea. You can find that in 1 Corinthians 13. 1 Corinthians 13, 13. And now abideth faith, hope, charity. Charity is love, these three, but the greatest of these is charity,
yeah,
or love. So right. That kind of idea is found there. But in in James 2, where it says faith without works is dead. It has a very particular thought in mind or truth in mind, and that is the whole context of verse 14 and following. It's talking about the idea of works as opposed to professing faith. As it says, let's see, in verse 14, what does it profit, my brethren, though a man say he has faith and have not works? Can faith save him? And that's a very important point, because we have a world of about 2 billion professing Christians, and that means they say that they are Christian. They say that they're God's people, that Christ has saved them. And so the real emphasis of this chapter and 14 and following is to show that words or profession cannot save, but it's faith without works is dead. We need the work of Christ to back up the profession. And
I understand that, but what I'm getting at is, can we look at this same verse, verse 14? What does it profit, my brethren, though a man say he hath faith and have not, and at this point substitute agape love?
Well, of course, love, it was involved with the work of Christ, for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, and Jesus, out of love, did this great work. So, yes, in that sense, but I wouldn't make that substitution. I wouldn't say that to others, because people have all kinds of ideas about love. And they may start thinking or having a train of thought that leads in a different direction than what God intends here. And that is, it's very simple that someone can say they have faith, but that means nothing unless Christ actually did the work of dying for them and paying for their sin. And that's the work that's involved here.
Yeah, I was thinking not just the word love, but the agape love. It means it was the love of God in them. So they can have faith, but they do not have the love. In other words, what I was getting at was how that word agape love, it specifically really points to the marriage relationship between Christ and the bride, because of the commitment that is made to those who shall be saved. It cannot be broken. And it was done, you know, out of just, you know, unmerited love. But in any case, because I think the works is kind of like, no matter what word we use in our human minds, we kind of can draw the wrong connotation of work. But I was looking at...
That was God's intention. For instance, in verse 21, was not Abraham our father justified by works? And then it says the same thing of Rahab. Was not Rahab the harlot justified by works? God wrote it intentionally that very way in order for some to get the idea, this is talking about doing good deeds and keeping the law, and it can justify you. And that's exactly why God wrote it that way, because he wrote the Bible that way. It's a trap.
Right. But
the fact is, when it says, was not Abraham our father justified by works, that it's not talking about his works. It's talking about the work of Christ. And
this is really a good place where substituting agape love in there, you could see where, you know, when you say he was justified by the love of God, and not,
well,
you know, and
well, you're adding God. You're adding of God, and of course God could have said that. He could have said, was not Abraham our father justified by the work of Christ, and made it very clear.
Yeah.
But he didn't write it that way. he wrote it again as a snare, so that anyone who's not one of his could fall into the trap and develop a works gospel. And people have done that, and they
understand. That's not where I was going. I understand all that. What I was getting at was that would it be incorrect with everything we know today? Would it be incorrect to look at this word and extrapolate it and tie it to agape love, you know, thinking it's the love of God himself? So when we look at the verse just like this, we can look at it deeper, like
if you're doing a Bible study or something, or you're sharing with someone, you can say, now the work of Christ, of course, involves the great love of God, and you can do a little commentary and explain it. But we're permitted to do that. That of course, the love of God is greatly involved with what Jesus did. But thank you for bringing up that verse and for your comments. And let's go to the next person. This will be our last person tonight who's on the phone. Welcome to Friday Night Question and Answer.
Brother McCann, could you please announce the time of the study coming up Sunday, Day of the Lord, and that it's going to be daylight savings time ending, and that's going to compound the issue for some people to get in touch with the
E-Bible? Oh, really?
Yep.
Are we putting the clocks back this Sunday?
I believe. Is it? No, maybe not. Maybe not. Maybe it's the 4th of November. It's on the 4th. But announce the time. And also, is there any feedback coming back from overseas, from others, and now that we're in the Day of Judgment, other than merchants wanting more business? And one more quick question. How can we understand, or how is it possible that someone like Brother Camping, who trumpeted Judgment Day, is not doing the same thing now?
Well, first the time. I think we'll start at 10:30 a.m. Guy Berry should be doing a Sunday school, and Lord willing, I'll be teaching a couple of studies, and we'll have a question and answer. The second thing you asked was overseas feedback.
Yeah.
Well, just some. I hear from some people from Africa and some people from South America, and I know of a few individuals, but the situation is that eBible really has, we used to be a ministry that ministered to a handful of thousands, and then as time went on, God opened up the great door and effectual leading up to May 21, and that increased to tens and then hundreds, and then towards the end, even millions. We were privileged to be able to share with, but now I would say we're back to thousands. And I think we just have to be patient and keep in mind we have an example of judgment on the churches, and God began that without letting anyone know for a period of time. And it wasn't until many years after that we realized it was 100% of the churches. And then over the course of time, more and more heard about it until all the elect came out of the congregations. So I think we need to be patient and wait on the Lord, and more and more individuals will come to hear that are in the U.S. and around the world, because if it's the Lord's teaching, then his people will know. And the other thing concerning Mr. Camping and how could he not teach this? Well, I think, we just have to realize that in the days, again, prior to May 21, E-Bible had the great privilege of being very closely involved with the Ministry of Family Radio to the point where it was hard to tell us apart. We were able to send track trips along with Project Jonah because Family Radio trusted us to do so. Family Radio also sent us a caravan of five RVs that we operated on the East Coast, and we did so basically on our own, except the vehicles belong to Family Radio, and we've returned them. But you can see how they must have trusted us in order to send us that. And eBible acted as the advertising arm of Family Radio in getting deals overseas. It was mainly individuals that associated with eBible that were Family Radio's manpower as we worked out these deals and were able to get this message to many nations. And so we had a very close relationship. Doctrinally, we were about as close as two ministries could be. And even after May 21, it was Mr. Camping, this is before his stroke, that asked me to continue teaching along with Gunther. He made that request to someone and was passed on to us. And it was at a time when I felt good to get that kind of encouragement. And then later, I was asked to teach on Family Radio doing the Bible study up until October 21. So throughout the five-month period, we also had a close relationship. But after that, Family Radio began to go in a different direction. And Mr. Camping, as you know, now says that no man knows the day or hour. And also Family Radio is teaching an ongoing salvation. And for even though I don't think they've come out and said it that I'm aware of, for all intents and purposes, they're denying that May 21 was Judgment Day. They would call it a very special day, but they don't know in what way. And so, you know, before I was accused and eBible was accused of just doing whatever Family Radio, following whatever Family Radio was teaching or Mr. Camping was teaching. And this was because, you know, there's a principle that the Bible lays out, I think with the Apostle Paul, that he says, follow me as I follow the Lord. And so we followed the teaching that was on Family Radio very, very closely because we checked it out. It was very in-depth. It proved from the Bible certain truths. We made correction accordingly, and we followed Mr. Camping as he followed the Lord. And so now at this point, when statements are made concerning no man knows a day or hour or ongoing salvation or anything, and there is no in-depth Bible study to back up those statements, there's been no study from Family Radio that, for instance, it explains the timeline or explains where we are in relationship to the Great Tribulation, or it explains how it is no man can know the day or hour, and touches all those many verses that very well does say in the Bible that God's people will know. It was just a statement. Well, now we'd have to say no man knows the day or hour, and they didn't go to Amos 3:7 or Ecclesiastes 8, and they didn't take into account that Noah knew and Lot knew and on and on and on. And when also a statement is made, well, you know, we can't be presumptuous. We're just going to continue teaching the gospel as if God is saving without any in-depth Bible study. See, this is the key that will help us to understand that there is something different happening at Family Radio and with Mr. Camping. Now, I'm not going to speculate on his health or on his abilities. That's none of my business, and I have great respect for him, and I won't get into that. But all I'll say is the fact that there is no in-depth Bible studies is very revealing. And on the other hand, we at eBible have been spending hundreds of hours going over the scriptures in an in-depth way, looking into this question ever since the day passed, and we're finding, we're actually finding biblical answers that take us in a different direction.
Well, brother, one other quick point. In the Bible, a very powerful man of God is swayed by a lying prophet in his weakened state. And I just wanted to bring that to your attention and thank you for your answer. May God bless you.
Well, thank you for your questions. And I would like to thank everyone for sharing your questions and your comments tonight, and especially for bringing up the Bible verses we had an opportunity to read and consider. Lord willing, we'll be back again this Sunday. And if you can, please join us as we broadcast our live fellowship. But for now, I'll say goodnight, and may the Lord's perfect will be done.